and welcome to Linux Journal Insider 192, the software development issue for April 2010. I'm Sean Powers.
And I'm Kyle Rankin.
And together we're Sean Powers and Kyle Rankin. We have to come up with a better name. This month we're talking about software development, and a lot like the ham issue, neither Kyle nor I are software developers, but that's not going to stop us from talking about it as though we know what we're doing. But before we get into the issue, Kyle, I recently saw you in MeetSpace. We were both in Southern California at Scale 8X. It was awesome.
Oh, yes. Scale was really great. It was definitely my first year. It was your first year too, correct?
Correct, it was.
Scale?
Yes.
Yeah, I was really, really impressed with that conference, actually.
Me too.
If anyone's in that area or likes to fly to conferences, I recommend that one for next year.
Right. We missed 7Xs of Scale that I'm sad about now because, yeah, it is a really great conference. And Kyle and I got to be part of the Nokia 900 Club together. We both have Nokia 900s. There were actually some other people there that had them as well. I thought that was pretty cool.
It was funny. I felt kind of like a minority group with the Nokias, because everyone that would come up to us talking about them, we'd be like, oh, someone else actually has one of these. I haven't seen anybody before, so it was pretty cool.
Right. There were lots of Android phones. And again, I have one of those, so I fit into that group too. But I felt like it was a more exclusive group to have the N900. So
yeah, and there are a lot of iPhones too, and then Bill could fit into that group really well. So
right, Bill. Yeah, Bill.
Everybody was fitting in.
Everybody fit in somewhere. So anyway, yeah, it was a really neat conference. We both got to speak. Actually, Catherine Druckmann got to speak as well. It was neat. I kind of felt like we were dominating the speaking scene there. There wasn't any time we could take a nap. We were all at doing a session at one point or another. But it was fun. Scale, again, yes, the Southern California Linux Expo. Is that right? Yes.
You missed advanced, but that's in the lowercase a, so maybe we're not supposed to say advanced. I'm not sure what the lowercase means. So
I thought it was the a in California.
I thought. Oh, really? I thought that meant advanced. Okay, well.
No.
I stand corrected. Well,
yeah.
Here we both have internet, so let's find out right now.
Okay. Well, you say that. I'll admit that while we were doing a video on the floor, I called it the South Carolina Linux Expo, so I'm fairly certain that since it took place in Los Angeles, it's not the South Carolina Linux Expo. But I'm pretty sure that...
You're right. There's no advanced. It's just no. Southern California, so the A is lowercase. Well, that makes a lot more sense, actually. I thought they were just doing like a clever thing there with the lowercase A. So, well, I stand corrected.
All right. And with that, I want to document that again, make a ringtone. I was right. No, just kidding. So anyway, let's move on because we're already past our time here for the opening section. I want to get right into it, and we're going to talk about articles. There's an article by Carl Fink talking about creating Flash and Flex projects with ActionScript 3 using Linux. Now, the significance here, for me at least, is that we're making Flash applications not just in, like, playing with them and interacting with them once they're created in Linux, but actually making them in Linux. I think that's kind of significant that we can do that.
Yeah, I mean, I remember it used to be that it was tough enough just to look at Flash things in Linux. So
right, exactly.
Being able to actually develop in it's a big step forward.
And for those developers out there now, they're going, no, it's still evil. Now, I will admit there aren't as many tools for the Linux programmer to develop in Flash. But, you know, it is nice that Flex actually integrates with the Eclipse IDE, if I'm not mistaken, is what it talks about. And a lot of Linux developers are very used to that. So it's, you know, again, you can make real full-fledged Flash applications using all openly available software. I think Flex is even open source, and maybe that's my turn for being wrong, but I believe that it at least has portions that are open source, which is awesome.
Yeah, and this article gives you a lot. If you were doing this for the first time, it gives you a really good section of code that shows you what to do, how to use the language, and how to build some basic programs here. Like he has an example of a quiz program.
Right, exactly. I mean, from start to finish, you can actually create a little application. And again, you know, obviously leaves room to grow, but it's nice to have a little, this is not only what you can use, but how you do it. So Carl did a nice job of introducing the whole process to us. It's pretty cool.
Now, am I the only one that's reminded of the old 321 Contact magazine with all these code blocks in the middle of the magazine? Do you know what I'm talking about? Am I?
I do. Dude, I kind of want to give you like a high five or something. Yeah, that's awesome. But you're absolutely right. Code snippets here and there. The nice thing is now we can copy and paste because of the digital world. Did you have to type those things in by hand?
Oh, man, yeah, I always type those in, and then I'd always miss a go sub somewhere or some mundane detail, and then it would never work, yeah.
Okay, this is a little segue, but I got to tell you, I used to get those, and I had the TI-99-4A computer, right? So there was like another, I don't know what the exact magazine was, but code snippets, right? But I couldn't type for crud. I mean, it was horrible. But my mom could type, so I would literally get my mom to type in these huge code snippets for me. So, yeah, that's my confession for the day. And, Mom, thank you. I did learn to type. I think maybe I can even type faster than you now. But, you know, I appreciate all those hours of typing in my little tiny character-based games. So, anyway, go ahead, Kyle. What's your first article on?
Okay, so the article I'm going to talk about is Mongoose, an Embedded Web Server in C, and that's written by Michael Hamill. And basically what this article is talking about is the software called Mongoose that you can – use if you're writing a C program or probably some other program that can integrate with C, and you'd like to have the web client, like say Firefox, be the front end for your program. You want to have some sort of web service, and you don't really want to have to write a CGI for Apache or write something else for Lighty or some other program, but you'd like to have, you know, some sort of web service. You can basically embed Mongoose into a C program, and it'll provide all of the connection handling with a web client, and it does all the basic stuff that a web server can do. In this article, Michael also talks about how to use Mongoose to handle authenticated sessions. So he talks about authentication and authorization, so you can set up a web service that people can log into and do a lot of other pretty sophisticated things, considering this is to be a lightweight addition to a C program. But again, a lot of great code examples. Where he walks you right through a basic connection, how you set up a basic connection with Mongoose, and like I said, a lot of code snippets. So if you're somebody who wants to write a web-based application and you want to embed it in a program, this would be a pretty handy thing. I think we were talking before, we don't believe Xbox Media Center, for instance, uses this, but this could be an example of something like that where you're developing an application that does something else, but it would be nice to have a web front end as well. And this is one way that you can do that.
Right, and it does. I mean, it makes it lightweight, which is nice, but also it makes configuration a lot simpler, because if you're installing a program that then has hooks into Apache or, you know, or PHP or, you know, whatever it has to do, that's one more level of trying to make the dumb thing work. And if it's all, you know, in the single piece of code, that makes it nice for the end user as well. Again, nice for the programmer because you're in complete control, but nice for the end user because there's less to configure. Things like torrent programs would be one that usually have a web interface that is embedded right into the thing. So, yeah, I think it's a win-win situation.
Yeah, because, I mean, I can imagine it being a real pain if you're trying to install some interesting application and then you see half of Apache's being downloaded or something just so that you can run the web portion of it. So.
Right, exactly. And then you need to test things afterwards. Which was an awkward segue into my next article. I remember we used to be like the segue kings. We haven't done that yet this episode. But anyway,
I was trying so hard to think of some way to segue what you were talking about with Mongoose, and it was tough. I was trying to think of stuff with snakes and everything.
Yeah, we need a cobra app. No, anyway, we're talking about Alexander Sirotkin's article on web application testing with Selenium. And what this is basically talking about is, you know, you have web applications, and we were talking about before the show, too, just how this is our software development issue, but every single thing is talking about web-based stuff. And that's just kind of the way of the world. I don't know, that seems to be the way things are going. But Selenium is an application that allows you to test your web applications. And the cool part for me as I'm reading it, it's like, cool, we get to make a little botnet to test our applications, which is basically what the little, that you install applications on multiple computers to test your web app.
Yeah, and just like with the other articles we were talking about, there's some great code snippets that you can use. It gives you an example of how to go to how to load a URL and how to automate some sort of testing where you go to a particular page, you can automate typing different characters in, clicking different buttons on the site, and you set up this environment, and then you can test it from a single machine, or they have an environment where you can deploy these tests to multiple machines, which could be really handy. I was telling Sean earlier that when I was doing code testing for a particular set of web servers that I had, the problem we had was our web servers were so powerful that it was difficult to have a single test machine generate a significant load. So we actually had to spread that load across multiple machines just to make the servers sweat a little bit. So, you know, Selenium has that sort of built in here where it makes it really easy to deploy to a lot of different machines.
And I think I like the idea that we're now justifying botnets. I just think that botnets get such a bad rap.
Some legitimate homegrown botnet.
Right. So as long as, you know, you have a clear record of what botnets are installed, you know, like keep some sort of a database of your botnets.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks. So the next article we want to talk about is called, goodness, how are we going to pronounce this? JSORMDB. JSORMDB.
Just say the whole thing. JSORMDB.
JSORMDB. I can't even come up with a really good French pronunciation for this. Which is an embedded JavaScript database, basically, and this article is written by Avi Deicher. And essentially what this article is talking about is the fact that, like we said before, there's a lot of focus on web development these days. A lot of software is written on the web, and specifically a lot of software is written in JavaScript. But one problem with writing things in JavaScript is you often don't have a direct access to a more sophisticated database like MySQL, at least directly within JavaScript. So what JSORMDB takes care of is it provides you this nice JavaScript database or this database that's accessible via JavaScript that you can throw real SQL-like queries to. And this article walks through how to set up the software, how to initialize the database, and then how to use JavaScript to point to this database and send transactions. Like, this supports transactions, it supports all, like I said, the standard SQL queries that you would expect to be able to use with something like MySQL.
Right. But again, all embedded right inside the JavaScript, so you don't have to worry about what's installed in the client and, you know, versioning of MySQL hooks, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that's very, very convenient. This issue is kind of cool. Again, this is neither one of our specialties, but it's a neat issue to read through, it, even if you're not a developer, just because there's all kinds of stuff. There's also stuff like there's a cool Android review. I have it's actually the Motorola Droid. I have a Motorola Droid, and the review's great. You should actually read that review. And that was a horrible segue. I wasn't trying to do a segue. I'm just trying to think of what else is in the issue for those who aren't programmers. But
I have, not to plug myself, but that sounds weird. But I have for example, my column is not necessarily about application development, but more I have a continuation of my troubleshooting series. So I'm talking about how to do network troubleshooting in this issue.
Right, and that. The networking troubleshooting was what you talked about at scale, correct?
Right. Yeah. Actually, I broke it up for the column into two different columns. So, yeah, if you went to my scale talk, this column is at least half of what I talked about at the talk. And if you didn't go, then you can read the column instead.
And you get twice. Yeah. Exactly. So anyway, this has been cool. Now let's. You know what we got to come up with, and we have to come up with some cool music for the mailbag. Mailbag, you know, I don't know, something. But we need to come up with something. But we have, I want to read this letter from Mark Kaufman about Linux and DRM, Digital Rights Management. So do you want to hum the mail song for us, Kyle?
I think I just ripped off David Letterman's mailbag theme. So,
all right.
Sorry, Dave.
That's okay. I was starting to rip off Blue's Clues, so, you know, that's all right. All right. Linux and DRM. If you ask me why I keep a Windows desktop, the answer is still three letters, DRM. I have two desktops, my Ubuntu 9.10, which is very good and does just about everything, and my Windows 7 desktop, which does everything with DRM. Even with the crossover Office plugin, I can't run Amazon Unbox, which allows me to watch my favorite TV shows over and over. Now, Mark talks about, goes into detail about he, you know, ran Red Hat since 6, and now he has Windows 7, but it doesn't run GNOME. But he ends up the article, or the letter, saying, the day I can run Amazon Unbox client, or the day Amazon ports Unbox over to Linux, and of course someday works out a deal with Netflix, that's the day that I give up this machine of great power, the Intel i7, and make it my new true desktop. My Linux desktop is highly functional and a flawless media server and print server for the house. Now, if we could only get the major streaming media people to help us out. And boy, does he ever hit on a great point. Now, I reply in the magazine. So, Kyle, what's your take on Linux and DRM?
Well, it's weird because, you know, maybe I hadn't followed Amazon's TV stream, but I wasn't too familiar with the Unbox servers before this, but I am familiar with Netflix, and I remember that really bummed me out when I saw that they had live streaming now for Netflix, and I had a Netflix account, but then I couldn't use it under Linux because they chose to use Silverlight. Now, the thing, I say that to say, the weird thing is that there seems to always be new DRM. It's like a treadmill of where once we get compatibility for one thing under Linux, it seems like there's always something new that someone comes out with that doesn't work. You know, like we were saying earlier, Flash. There used to be that everyone was like, "Oh, I hate Flash sites. They don't run under Linux." And now people just say, "I hate Flash sites" because they're Flash sites, I guess. But but you know, I remember, you know, we used to be really against a lot of things like AVIs. I remember, you know, /threads slamming AVIs up until the point that Linux started supporting them. Now everybody seems to be okay with them, you know. Right. So I guess the thing with DRM is it's really annoying because these companies are in this position, I suppose, where they're afraid that everyone's going to pirate their stuff if they don't do this. While the people who are really pirating the stuff figure a workaround all the time anyway, and then the rest of us who are just trying to watch a video under Linux get the short end of the stick.
Yeah, we actually pirate it because we can't do it legitimately. I mean, I'm not saying that you're a pirate, Kyle. I'm just saying, doggone it, I'll go out there and say, you know, yes, there's times I have to pirate stuff because I can't watch it, and that's very, very frustrating for me. You know, when I look at things like Roku, which is awesome, and it runs Linux, and it plays Netflix, but I can't on my Linux box play Netflix, so I don't know what that voodoo is that's going on in there. But come on, that drives me nuts. So.
I think the one solution we're going to find is as more and more little embedded machines are running Linux, even though the people that bought them have no idea that they're truly, you know, that they're running Linux, that some of the support is going to end up getting in mainstream Linux distributions just by virtue of the fact that the software is already there.
Right. I hope so. I see things like, you know, although I haven't seen one in person, the Barnes & Noble Nook is running Android. I mean, you know, that's pretty slick. So I can definitely see, you know, some ebook DRM functionality being transferred over to, you know, regular Linux world as, you know, because Android is Linux. So anyway, that's what I see going on. We're getting close to the end, and I could talk about DRM for like a whole episode here. But can you imagine a Linux Journal DRM issue? Oh, that would wow. Yeah, that would go over like a lead balloon. But anyway, any closing thoughts before we close up this issue, Kyle?
Oh goodness. Just that, you know, if anything, even if you're a software developer, or especially if you're a software developer that does web apps, this is definitely the issue for you. And even if you're not, not only are there a lot of other articles in here that talk about other topics, but it's just really interesting to see the current state of software development and how much of it's based on the web these days.
Right, exactly. I guess I'll just close by saying make sure to read that Droid review this month, and then next month, I think, maybe that's secretive, maybe I shouldn't announce it, but I think next month your N900 review is going to be live, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. So I won't say anything else now on it, just so that it's a bit of a surprise and so we can cover it for the next podcast.
Okay, and then we can compare and contrast next month. All right, well, thank you for listening to the Linux Journal Insider for the April 2010 issue. Make sure that you pick up a copy on newsstands in mid-March. And if you're a subscriber and you're listening to this, you probably already have a copy in your grubby little hands. Or maybe it's on the way. Hope you enjoy.
Or maybe it's your Lila little hands.
Lilo-y. Yeah, nice. Not your grub two hands, though, because that's not quite developed enough. No. Anyway, next month we'll be featuring entertainment. I think that's going to be an awesome issue. So make sure to tune in again and listen to Kyle and me banter about entertainment and Linux. And don't forget to visit us every day at LinuxJournal.com. See you next month.